probably got more than two styles. Two adapt in the situation, two shots. And though the road is rocky, I'm ready to try the next mile to break sight to the blind man. It's down to the left child. We will survive in this country wilderness. Swimming through the waters of Babylon like a rebel fish. Journalist, specialist, critical and survivalist. Spitting heaven, fire from his lips. Burn the same driver.
Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, New Media for the New Millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." We as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom with all thy getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and catch the live stream from that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening, and catch the live stream there also. You can go to ourradionetwork.com. Again, that's ourradionetwork.com. You broadcast out of the Black Belt and catch the live stream there. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. And in that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you have the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for an Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In the Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted daily by myself or Brother Richard. And do me a favor, before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook, and Time for an Awakening Media is there. Always full of the latest podcasts of the various programs on Time for an Awakening Media. Interesting content that you can read, download at later times, and share with your friends. Also check out that Time for an Awakening Marketplace and our partnership with the BB2Me. Always interesting things being put in the marketplace all the time. Different African language classes, classes on education, economics, social systems, health, and much, much more being taught by professors on both the continent and in the diaspora. So again, make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. It's 7:08 here in the city of Philadelphia on this hot Sunday evening. I guess it's up around 96 degrees. It's Richard, Brother Richard type of weather. And we have two guests scheduled for this evening. The first hour, we'll be spending some time with Vaisa Sanudi of the Philadelphia chapter of Afrocentricity International, Brother Omowale Africa. He'll be on to tell us, give us a little preview of the RBG Centennial Conference and the Global Accord for the Development of Sovereign African State. That'll be held on August 8th and 9th of this year. And we'll get a little preview of that tonight in the first hour of the program. In the second hour, the historian and executive director of PANIFEST, the PANIFEST Foundation, Rabbi Kohen Netanya Halevi, will be joining us to talk about a lot of different issues. And one of them will be the social media post and statements attributed to some of our young black entertainers and athletes that have been deemed anti-Semitic. We're going to talk about that tonight, whether the posts are anti-Semitic, whether there's any truth to what is being said in popular media. We'll get to the bottom of this tonight in the second hour of our conversation with our special guest, and we'll be right back to get the program started. If I can get these announcements queued up on time, we'll be right back to get the program started after a brief word from our sponsor. And again, it's 7:10 here in the city of Philadelphia. We'll be right back.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch Street. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir, on this hot sunny evening?
Hey, look, you know, you ain't got to tell this melanated individual that it's hot and that he's loving it. But, you know, aside, Elliot, let me see, should I do this in the spirit of the UNIA, Universal Negro Improvement Association? I'm one of them Negroes that love the heat so much, don't even have an air conditioner.
We got a fan going or what?
Well, I have to be honest, you know, the last couple of nights, you know, it's the humidity sometimes that's like bad. So I got an overhead fan, but I had to put the little fan on and said, like, you know, do the brother a little justice.
Oh, and you sitting in the convection oven.
Hey, we trying to grow some, we trying to grow people in here. It's not as bad, especially when you get to go out and then you have to walk, since, you know, you don't have the modes of transportation where you can just jump in and turn on and roll.
Yeah, well, I hate you, but I gotta have something to cool down. I'm kind of used to that air now, especially in the business where you might have people in there, but although we done stopped all that crowding up now, but you know, still I gotta have some type of something blowing, especially in weather like this. I can't do without it.
Hey, look, I know our people ain't going for it. I was in North Philadelphia yesterday, and you're talking about in the area where it's houses all over and nobody's outside, but you hear those what's those thing called, the thing that generates the air for the houses.
Oh, the central air.
Yeah, they were blowing. They were blowing. People ain't playing. I ain't coming outside messing with y'all.
Oh, boy. Yeah, well, you know, we got a full program, the slated to have a full program tonight. Our first guest in the first hour of the program is somebody that's been here before and familiar with the Time for Awakening audience, and they're familiar with him, the Vice Sanudi for the Philadelphia chapter of Afrocentricity International, Brother Omawali Africa. He's with us tonight to kind of give us a little preview or prelude of the RBG Centennial Conference and the Global Accord for the Development of the Sovereign African State that'll be held on August 8th and 9th of this year. And let me get Brother Omawali on with us. Brother Omawali, how are you, sir?
I'm doing good, Brother Elliot. How you doing?
I'm doing great. I was watching the Zoom presentation. Man, I'm telling you, you almost like Richard. I don't know how you do it. Watching the Zoom presentation and your presenter, Brother Earl Henderson, said, "Brother, you falling asleep?"
Oh man, it's been a busy couple of weeks. Almost gone. Like these last 3 weeks have just been really crazy planning for this conference. So I was just telling Dr. Mazama, I was replying to an email of hers, that I've been on conference calls and meetings pretty much all day up until about a half an hour ago.
Yeah, well, listen.
Busy time.
We're going to get you to talk a little bit about it tonight. We might get you squeeze you back in there just before things kick off. But give us a little preview of some of the things being planned for the conference. Before you do that, because I know that you spoke about it before, briefly, about it being the 100th anniversary of Marcus Garvey's call. Was that the only reason that you came up with this idea, if you did on your own, or was it other reasons that you came up with this idea now to strike while the iron is hot, so to speak?
So I guess a couple of things kind of came together with this. Back in 2018, the initial idea was that 2020 is right around the corner, and we knew that it would be, you know, the 100-year anniversary of the first International Convention of Negro Peoples of the World and the Declaration of Rights of Negro Peoples of the World, of which Article 39 stated that the colors of the race would be red, black, and green. So I had went out and just brought a domain name. It was called Park 2020, and the goal in Park is P-A-R-C, and it was going to be the Pan-African Revivalist Conference of 2020 to commemorate that moment. So that idea kind of like got thrown out there. But I think that when you're organizing, you know, lots of ideas come up and you try to, you know, consolidate things so that you can stretch out your resources. So I want to say in about 2019, the idea was that, you know, the Molefe Kepiasante Institute is located in Germantown. And our argument was that, you know, there aren't that many, you know, a lot of people refer to Germantown as G-Town. But there aren't that many Germans in G-Town, right? It's most of the people there are 99% African-American. Mm-hmm. So we said we wanted to do something to turn the name of that area of the city from G-Town, Germantown, turn it to Garveytown. So that was the idea, and we were going to do this thing called the Garveytown Arts and Cultural Expo, which was going to be like a big festival. It was going to paint the town red, black, and green, and, you know, change the name of that section of the city to Garveytown instead of Germantown. Long story short, COVID-19 hit, and after AI Week ended, you know, we have AI Week annually from Malcolm X Day to African Liberation Day. So after AI Week ended, we started to ask, well, it looks like we aren't going to be able to convene any big outdoor events during the summer. So what's the game plan for our celebrations around Garvey and the centennial? So that's kind of like when we went back to the idea of doing a conference or a convention, and we said we could do it, you know, online, since we basically just did a 4-week of events online for AI Week. You know, we thought that we could do something very similar to commemorate, you know, Garvey, commemorate the 100-year anniversary. So that's where the idea came from. We came out of AI Week at the end of May. So at the beginning of June, we approved the plan. I wrote up a very detailed proposal. The team, we had a good conversation around it. And at that, I want to say the last week of June, we kind of like had a line for what the conference would be. And since then, I've just been sprinting, trying to pull this thing together. So that's kind of like how we got to where we are right now.
You know, I'm looking at the, have it in front of me, and I'm looking at the table of contents, and, on page 4 is what is the global accord for the development of the sovereign African state. But when you get down a little bit and it's critical matters of the state, the first one mm-hmm. you have listed there is the importance of ritual for reconciliation, for restoration, and for repair. Give me a little bit of your view and understanding of that, because Brother Omwali, if you talk to, I don't want to say the average one of our people. If you talk to a percentage of our people and you talk about those three things you mentioned there, they might not have a clue to what you're talking about. And I listen, that's sad. That's our challenge. But reconciliation, restoration, and repair, I think, is key to what we need to do as a people. But talk about it from your perspective.
Yeah, so the reason why I put that there, and that whole section, Critical Matters of State, and the document that I wrote up, I was just really showing some examples of some of the things that we would need to cover in a global accord for the development of a sovereign African state. And that the idea is for us to really go through this exercise of really documenting and writing down all the stuff that is critical to managing a nation, right? So that our young people have a template and have processes in place by which they can navigate some of the challenges that they are going to come up against. And one of the challenges that our movement has been plagued with, you know, for as long as I've studied, you know, the history, but especially, you know, throughout the 20th century, you see plenty of this in the Garvey movement, is this idea of factionalism. You know, we have, you know, in organizing, there's going to be friction. You know, when you're building, when you're in a relationship, whether it's brothers and sisters, husband and wife, whatever it is, it's going to be friction. And I think that if we know that we're involved in a process that is going to generate a significant amount of friction, then we need to create a process by which when friction occurs, the fallout doesn't splinter or split the movement into different factions.
Okay.
And I think that that's what we've seen over the last 100 years, to the point that, you know, within the Pan-African nationalist movement, there's a great deal of disharmony because this person doesn't get along with that person, or, you know, there's a lot of academic gangbanging and a lot of different, like, personalities that as a result, it just has a splintered and, you know, all these different factions are in their own pockets. So the reason why I wanted to put that there is I'm saying that, you know, a mature people should put a process in place by which Ma'at can be restored, right? By which, you know, Isfet can be done away with. And, you know, we can come back into one accord to continue to work towards something that's bigger than any one of us, or that's bigger than any of our egos, right? So that's what I'm arguing. And that's what I'm saying, that we need to create something. I don't know what it would look like. I mean, I have proposals, I have suggestions for what it could look like, but I think that it needs to be something that we as a community develop with the understanding that, listen, there's going to be fights, there's going to be fallouts, but we have to have a means by which we shake hands and continue to move forward together after the fight or after the fallout occurs. So that's why I wanted that to be there, because just as, you know, someone who organizes at the grassroots level, that disharmony, those beasts, those factions, it really negatively impacts the work, right? Because it doesn't allow us to achieve that unity that we need in order to organize ourselves into a, you know, into a formidable formation, or into a formidable force, right, that can achieve the goals that we're trying to achieve. So,
you know, I see that as a huge challenge. It's not something that we can't develop a strategy against, but it's a huge challenge. And before I pass the mic to Brother Richard, I want to get your opinion on it. The I think personally, if these things just happen among us, that we're intelligent enough as a people to deal with it, but it's been interference by other peoples, enemies of our peoples, that have a concerted effort to not see us work together, to not see us come together, because coming together is detrimental to the system that we live under. So it's always been the unseen hand that helps exacerbate problems when we try to come together. So it's not only...
Yeah, but you know...
Go ahead.
The unseen hand can only work through, like, the weak link in the chain.
Exactly.
You understand? There's only, you know, like, the unseen can only manifest itself through the seen. Right? So, you know, I think that they're a known entity, right? When we're dealing with mathematical equations, you have all types of variables, some known, some unknown.
Okay.
Right? Our enemy is a known variable in this particular equation. We know that they're there. We know that they're working against us. We know that they're manipulating folks who are among us, who we know they're trying to infiltrate. That is what it is. Like, me personally, like, we exist within a technology-driven world. So I operate, and this is just my own personal thing. I don't tell anybody to do what I do, but I operate from the perspective that we're already infiltrated.
Okay.
So everything that I do kind of like with that in mind, right? Because I know that I'm on a board, I'm on a chessboard, and I know I have an opponent who's playing against me.
Okay.
So I don't need to be like fearful. I don't need to be paranoid. Like, I just need to move with some intelligence, you know, with some reason. You know, I'm just saying, there's things that you do when you know that you're engaged and you have opposition. There's things that you do to manage your opposition.
Okay.
And I guess for me, like, that kind of like comes from the streets, right? On the streets, the brothers who out there who hustling on the streets, they know what they're doing is illegal. The cops know what they're doing is illegal, right? The cops got a job to do, but those brothers feel like that they got a job to do. So they're going to do what they do. The cops do what they do, right? It's like that cat and mouse thing. So it's the same thing with liberation, right? I know that our enemies don't want us to be liberated, and my enemies know that I know that. So, like, let them do what they do, and we're going to do what we do. Like, but it ain't no need to be, you know, scary or concerned. I mean, we're using telephones right now. We're using the internet. Like, unless you plan on going, like, off the grid, you should always assume that they know pretty
exactly
much everything. That you understand what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, so, most definitely.
I think that's the perspective that I operate from. Not that I put everything out there for them to see, but you have to understand that what you are putting out there, whenever you're using these devices, whenever you're talking around one of these devices, you should do so with the understanding that what you're saying, they're hearing.
Mm-hmm.
So if you know that, you'll be careful about the things that you say and do around these particular devices. That's just my perspective. But just to go back to your earlier question about, you know, the need to prepare and to develop, you know, laws, so to speak, and processes by which you govern a nation. You know, a lot of our people come out of the church. So the best example you can use for them is probably the example of the Jewish, or you call them the so-called Jews, whatever you want to call them, the example of that community. Right. Because before they even had borders, before they even had a nation by which they lived within, they considered themselves a nation, and they developed laws. Right. They developed rules, like they developed all these things before they even had borders. So I'm saying that we as a people that are looking to build and create a nation. Right. That Garveyite vision. Then I think that even before we get there, and I think that that's what the UNIA was trying to do, you know, calling themselves, you know, a government, you know, not in exile, but, you know, a government in process of building that nation. Right. They were, you know, Garvey was serving as like the potentate, the provisional president of this nation that wasn't quite yet in existence, but preparing in advance for it to be in existence. And I'm saying that these are the things that we need to be doing right now. I don't think that, you know, I think that our movement has learned a lot over the past 100 years. So I don't think that we need to draw as heavy on, you know, parliamentary politics and Western ways of doing things. I think that we can draw or rely more on our own traditions to build what we're trying to build. And I think that that's what, you know, those are the things that we try to correct in terms of, you know, the way that Garvey tried to do it versus what we're trying to do now, right? Because we're all prisoners of our own time, right? So we do these things, but let's document them so that our youth can have something, right? They can have a starting point by which they can say, okay, well, this is what our ancestors were doing. This is where they went wrong. This is what we can do differently to achieve this goal that they set out for us. And I think that, you know, that's the significance of this moment. That's the significance of this conference. And that speaks to what we were trying to address with those critical matters of state.
Okay. We're in Congress.
As I'm listening and I'm trying to tie, you know, develop this particular question, let me say that I'm very much impressed with the convening, you know, team for putting on something. What I'm hearing, and you can elaborate on how many people answered the call, you know, and then how and the context that the call was put out for us to do in relationship to this convention that ties it to what Garvey and that team of that time called, you know, that convention, because the magnitude was broad, right? People came there. It wasn't virtual. And if I'm not, you correct me if I'm wrong, people came from all over. I mean, all over the African world.
Yeah, yeah.
Part of it. So what is the call being asked of us in these 2 days to be able to sift out in relationship to the overall vision of a sovereign global African nation?
Yeah. So to answer your first question in terms of how many people answered the call,
mm-hmm.
too many. Too many people answered the call.
Which is a good thing. I mean, you know, that's a great indicator.
It is. It showed that there was a great deal of interest and excitement around this. So the planning committee, it was a team of 10 That committee has now grown to a team of 12, so six brothers and six sisters as well, you know, planning collectively. And so when we put out the call, you know, now with all of the panelists, the moderators, and the individual speakers who are speaking during the breakout sessions, we have roughly 96 people that we are coordinating to pull off this two-day conference. So the theme of the conference is Garveyism and the Renewed Cry for African Nationhood. So it's a two-day conference, August the 8th and the 9th. And folks can go to the website, and more detail is there. The website is www.rbgcentennial, that's C-E-N-T-E-N-N-I-A-L.com, www.rbgcentennial.com. So, yeah, it's a two-day conference. And the goal of the conference really is for us to come together and commemorate, A, this 100-year anniversary of this significant moment and gathering that happened 100 years ago, but also for us to examine, right, our movement over the last 100 years, but most importantly for us to plot our course that takes us into the next 100 years, right? Because if we're thinking nation, you know, we always got to be planning for the long term. So what the work that we do today is going to be, you know, it's our children, right, or their children or their children's children are going to inherit the fruits of our labor, right? So if we don't labor, it won't be no fruit for them to inherit. But that being said, on day one of the conference, we take a look back at the past 100 years. And the way that we do that is we examine some of the movements that gave a great deal of political and cultural character to us as a people. So on day one, we're looking at, you know, like the reparations movement. So we have Queen Mother Mashariki Chiwanda, who's the female national co-chair for NCOBRA. She's speaking on day one. We have a panel on education for self-determination. So we're looking at, you know, the independent Black institutions movement, the independent Black schools, the Afrocentric Black studies movement, to see what were the lessons from that and how do we take those lessons and go into the future. So on that panel, we got, you know, Dr. Malefi Asante, Dr. Joyce King, a few local educators, Brother Akil Parker or Akil Latif, Brother Ishmael Jimenez, and we have Brother Obi Egbona Jr. Speaking on that panel. And then we end out the first day speaking with our political prisoners, right? Because the movement to free our political prisoners has been a significant movement, right? Because with every movement that we have, there's always state repression, right? And as a part of that repression, you know, people get killed, people get, you know, captured and, you know, are stuck behind enemy lines, like many of our political prisoners, and some people get exiled, like, you know, Assata Shakur. But on day one, we have Mama Janine Africa, who's with the Move 9, served, I believe, 40 years in prison or 41 years in prison. She was recently released, so she's on the panel. We have Brother Daruba Ben Wahad, or Baba Daruba Ben Wahad. I think he served about 22 years as political prisoner. And then we have Baba Sekou Odenga, one of the brothers from the Black Liberation Army, who liberated Assata Shakur back in, was it 1982 when she was liberated? 1979 when she was liberated? Mm-hmm. But either way, he'll be speaking as well about the importance, you know, of the work around working to free our political prisoners and that being a part of our repair. But also, you know, them giving us a message that takes us into this, you know, help us to carry on our movement. And then on day two is all focused on the future. So everything about day two, we have panels around, you know, just strategies for nation building, strategies for healing the nation, strategies for feeding, protecting, defending the nation. So we have some good panels. I think we end out on day two. So Baba Baruti will be the last person that speaks. And he's going to sound the Akoban. That's the war horn, by, you know, giving us a message on, you know, the need for African manhood and disciplined warriorhood. But right before he speaks, we have a panel that deals with strategies for reclaiming and protecting the land. And on that panel, I think you have Philip Smith, who's Naga. He was on your show about 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. You have Brother Kalanji Changa out of ATL, the FCP movement. You have Brother Amari, which is the Harriet Tubman and Nat Turner group. And I believe I'm forgetting a few names here, but I'm just saying over the 2 days, day two deals with the future, taking us 100 years into the future, and day one deals with the past. And again, all of that, you can get your tickets. You can read more about it. It's all on the website. The website is www.rbgcentennial.com. Centennial is spelled C-E-N-T-E-N-N-I-A-L.com.
You know, Elliot, when your brother Omawale, the thing that, as you're mentioning this, and I'm stuck on us defining that 100 years from now, because I think, and we just heard a talk from Brother Henderson, you know, dealing with the importance of theory, but the importance of knowing what the future, you know, defining that future, right? And I'm saying this because I would like for the Time for Awakening audience to, in each and every one of your own way, it's something because of this virtual mechanism to be able to plug into and be able to partake in this here. To and now, Brother Omawale, do you have an idea of how many people attended the convention in 1920?
So the convention was done from August the 1st through August the 31st. At its peak, they had a mass meeting at Madison Square Garden where they had 25,000 people in attendance. And at that meeting, they had more than 2,000 delegates that represented 22 different countries.
You see how powerful. Now, here we are in the 21st, and we're talking about looking in the 22nd century, and you're putting together a conference, y'all putting together a conference in this virtual space. It just seems that we should all be able to, one, interact in this, the RGB 100 convention, because all you have to do is really, as you say, log on, or, you know, purchase your way in, or get your ticket. You don't even have to fly. You don't have to get a hotel room. You don't have to do anything if you're listening to us. But what you're asking us to do is also to define in our own way what that 100 years from now look like. And I think that's so powerful and important. But the question I'll ask for this is, I know where, you know, Black people can work leadership to death. And I'm not exaggerating that. We can work leadership to death in trying to fulfill what we need. What is it to be able to pull together in the virtual space a convention like this? I was curious about that as you're going through. This wasn't something you were preparing for. Everybody's doing it now. But having something of this magnitude, could you speak to what is that, the tension, the growth, the understanding of utilizing a virtual space as a means of an organizing tool and an information communication tool?
So it's a lot of work. I think that, and I'm just being very honest with the listeners here, that when we initially said that we were going to put on a virtual conference, we had no idea, right, the amount of work and consideration that goes into it. So yes, I mean, you do get rid of some of the concerns where, okay, we don't got to worry about hotels, we don't got to worry about flights and picking people up from the airport or none of that stuff, right? All of that stuff you don't have to worry about. But what you do have to worry about now is like the technology, right? Because so this whole COVID-19 situation has made all of us specialists, right, when it comes to using Zoom, right? For about the past 3 or 4 months, everybody has been on, you know, about 1,000 Zoom meetings right now to stay connected, or we've been doing all of our gatherings virtually. But this particular conference, and this is the message that we've been driving home to all of our participants, this is not just another Zoom meeting, right? It really is a conference that we're using Zoom to facilitate. And I think that that's the difference, right? Because we're creating something that is going to live as a historical document, right? These things are going to be recorded. So unlike 100 years ago when our ancestors met and they had these meetings about the next 100 years, we don't have much of that content. We don't know who all the speakers were. We don't know their names. At most, we have, you know, some very nice pictures from the parades in Harlem. We have, you know, some of Garvey's speeches and his words from there. But for the most part, we don't have anything else. And it was 31 days of content, right? That's a significant amount of history, you know, that is missing. So for us, like, we're doing everything that we can to capture every element of this history for our progeny. So they'll have access to all of the recordings. So not only are we recording, we're trying to raise money so that we can actually get this the recordings translated into the other colonial languages, right? Because the majority of people that are there are going to be English-speaking. Mm-hmm. But African people speak French. They're speaking Portuguese. They're speaking Spanish. And we want to get them access to this material because there's an awakening happening in those spaces, and this information is necessary for them, right? So in terms of, like, the work that's going into it, I mean, we have an entire – a production team that's working behind the scenes to coordinate everything from graphics. And this is it's an intergenerational exercise. So we have young people, but we also have older people who we have to work with on the technology. Some people we have to pre-record because they're in different parts of the world where their Wi-Fi may not be that good. And we don't want them to be giving a presentation during the conference. And, you know, the audience loses them because, you know, the technology isn't working, right? So these are all the things that we are accounting for. So we're pre-recording certain people. Other people, we've had production planning meetings. We hosted three over the last week where we invited all the participants to come and meet with the leader of our production team so that he can walk them through and put them in the mind state that they really are preparing for a production and not just another Zoom meeting, right? So we're really trying to cover all of our, you know, all dot all of our I's and cross all of our T's so that we can do something that our ancestors, but also that our grandchildren and great-grandchildren will be proud of when they see it.
And my last question, Elliot, is in the context, because one of the surviving symbols of 1920 is the our red, black, and green flag. And I think that, you know, regardless, it's one of those symbols, and I might be correct in saying that it is a symbol, right, of that sovereignty that that those thousands of people came together and said that represents us moving towards sovereignty. And I want us to be clear, especially when we're talking about this technology, because the platform we're using, even though you speak of the technical part, the platform we're using, we still don't own and secure that is under our sovereign control. And when we look 100 years from now, I assume a lot of us, most of us, I hope, will want that to be. Can you speak to the symbol of the red, black, and green and why the significance of that flag and why this becomes the center point of the RBG 100?
Yeah, I would say that, Brother Rich, as a nation, that flag represents something that binds us all together, right? It's the hopes and aspirations of our ancestors, of us present day, and of our future all in one, right? I know all of us know the colors, what they mean, but if folks don't know, but I assume that your audience does, but, you know, the red is for the blood, the black is for the people, and the green is for the land and the hope of things to come, right? That future aspiration, right? So when Garvey gave us that flag, it was because there was this song that was out during the turn of the 20th century, especially after the World War I, where all the nations and the League of Nations, all these things happening, people were trying to disgrace black people and dishonor black people and beat us down. So there was this very popular song. It was called, you know, Every Nation Has a Flag Except a Coon. You know what I mean? So making fun of us. So Garvey was about instilling race pride and instilling pride in self. And as a part of that, he wanted us to see ourselves collectively, the 400 million people at that time, across the earth as one nation. And he said that our project was to come together and to create for ourselves a nation on the African continent that was strong enough to protect us wherever we are on this planet, right? So he wasn't trying to relocate, and I don't use the term repatriate because that is a It's a convoluted political term that I think a lot of people use it, don't know what it actually means. But so I'll say that he was not trying to relocate the majority of us back to the African continent, but he recognized that a portion of us from all over the African world, so that means Africans in the United States, in Haiti, Jamaica, and Brazil, and Canada, Africans on the continent, right? A portion of us would have to come together to coordinate our efforts to build that nation on the African continent. And that nation does not exist today. And that's what we're calling for with this call for, with this conference. We're calling for us to, again, Garveyism and the renewed cry for African nationhood, right? So it's a call, it's a cry to the young people, right? It's an introduction of them to Garvey and to Garveyism, right? And what his mission was, and actually showing them how they can get involved in it wherever they are. But we are especially reaching out to the African youth on the continent, because our enemies are doing a great deal of outreach to them to make sure that, you know, they can maintain things the way that they currently are.
Yes,
you're absolutely right. We're in conversation with Vice Sanudi of the Philadelphia Chapter of Afrocentricity International, Brother Omowale Africa. And he's convening the RBG Centennial Conference here, and it'll be a global conference for the development of sovereign African state. It's August 8th and 9th. Brother Omowale, you know, I'm looking at some of the workshops, and two of them jumps out to me. All of them are really important, but two of them, because of the state we're living in, really jump out to me. The homeschooling, independent black schools, and the need to build independent black institutions is really key now. You know, we have some of our people, Brother Baruti is involved in education, Akil Parker, Marcus Klein. We have people around the country in different areas that are heavily involved in institution building. How do we kind of coordinate those efforts now, especially now, under these circumstances where it's going to be dangerous for our children? I'm not really concerned about other people, but for our children to be going back into these institutions where they have no plan and they just want children to attend school. We were already behind the eight ball before this. So now our children are really going to be put at a deficit if we don't make plans to continue their education. Well, your opinions.
Yeah, what I would say is that the reason why those two topics are there, I mean, I think we selected 27 different topics for the conference that people could present on, but specifically homeschooling and then the independent black institutions. So homeschooling, like, I think that we really have to drive home the need for alternative education. Yes. As a means of survival for our people.
Yes.
Right? Because education, like anything else in a society, is a process. And every process has three parts to it. You have the input, you have the throughput, and you have the output. Now, when you examine what the needs are for the output, then that explains what your child is going to go through in the throughput. And let me basically explain what that means to you, right? In this particular society, us as African people, the end goal of our education has always been either for us to be a slave, right? So you learn just enough so that you can fulfill the role of labor in this society. You know, but coming out of slavery, the end goal of education has been for us to learn enough so that we can sell our labor, right, into the wage market, right? So I have this professional degree. This degree will yield me a certain amount of dollars in salary. I can go and sell basically my skill set, meaning my labor, into the labor market. A corporation will buy it, and that's how I will make my living, right? So as the global economy is transforming. And this goes back to, like, the need for us to be looking out 100 years from now, right? Because our enemies, they're looking out 100 years from now. And they're saying, when they look out, they're saying, hey, we don't see enough employment to feed the number of mouths that we have on this planet. So as a result, we need to greatly reduce the population of people that we have on this planet. And where they're looking to drive the greatest decrease in population is on the African continent, right? They want black people to be the burden bearers of the decrease in population on the planet, because the planet, right, the economy, the systems that are in place are run or managed in a way that go against nature, right? So it's not sustainable. So the only way to sustain this system of death is to ensure that you wipe out a significant amount of people on the planet, because the planet as it exists is enough to sustain everybody that's on the planet. But the way the systems that we live with on the planet are not, right? Not everybody can live like Americans. If the entire world lived the way that so-called, like, the, you know, Americans live, then we will be starved out in a week. You understand what I'm saying? So yes. that's the first thing, right? You can't, we can no longer afford to have our children going through this educational system where the goal is for them, to basically get enough education or training so that they can sell their labor into the labor market. That can't be the goal. That can't be the purpose of education for African children, which is why the panel that we have is education for self-determination, right? Or education for liberation, because then it asks you, okay, well, what types of things does my child need to know and learn in order to survive on the planet? But more important to that, what types of challenges, you know, is the next generation and two generations from now going to be faced with that we need to acquire the skills now so that we can meet those challenges when they get here, right? Yeah. And I think that that's the nature of what our education needs to be. And in terms of us, you know, building independent Black institutions, I mean, look at the Nick Cannon situation. You know what I mean? Like, he is someone, he's talent. He sold his talent labor to the corporation, but it's not a Black-owned corporation. It's not a Black-controlled institution. So therefore, if you say something they don't like, they can get rid of them. You know, Marcus Garvey gave us the example a long time ago. He said we need to have independent Black media. Media is significant, especially in the 20th and 21st century. Like, media and messaging, this is the way that you shape the minds of the masses. It's the greatest tool, even more so than the educational system. So if we don't have any independent Black media, if we don't have independent Black institutions that can sustain our efforts and that can maintain our institutional memory, then we're playing games. Like, I'm saying that, you know, I'm saying with Garvey, you know, that we need to be building these institutions. And Garvey's institutions were not built on a capitalist model. They were sustained by the dues-paying members and those who subscribe to the Negro world. They paid a fee, and every week they got a, you know, they got a paper. But what I'm saying is that those of us who are serious about this, we have to find ways to finance our own liberation. And the only way to do that is to erect those cultural institutions that provide the things that we need in order to live, right? Because we don't need to go out of our community to access the things that we need to survive. I think the problem is so many of us have this capitalist mindset where it's like, you know, I'm going to sell toothpaste because it's going to make me rich. Not, I'm going to sell toothpaste because it'll keep, you know, this local economy of ours, keep everything in-house so that we can be self-sustaining and build ourselves up, right? You got one group of people who they want to do Black business because for them it's like, you know, it's a competitive advantage. They're Black, so Black people are going to come spend their dollars with them. But they're going to take those dollars and go buy a mansion around white people, you know what I mean, and send their kids into white schools, right? So, like, what they're trying to do is that can't be our mission. So I think that's why we even have to be critical of people when they're talking about Black business, because not everybody has that same aims, the same goals and objectives. So I think we got to be clear on what our objectives are.
You know, before we, because I want to let you kind of give all the people the details on how they can participate and things like that, or get the virtual tickets. Before we do that, let me just pick your brain a little bit, Brother Omowale. This plague of violence that, and I don't want to put it on necessarily on our community, because this is a violent country. It's violent people that established this country. This country is built on violence. So the way I look at it now, it's starting to consume this country, and our people are caught up in the whirlpool, so to speak. But we have to do something about this. This plague of violence that's plaguing our community, as a younger brother, how do you see this strategies to counteract some of the other people, especially some of our elders, have been trying to adopt different strategies? It doesn't seem to be taking much of an effect right now, but we have to do something. Give me something, tell me something, Brother Omowale, from your perspective.
Yeah, my the analogy that I would give is this. You know, there's when, you know, I had this saying that I said is like, it's like, you know how when the tide is coming in from an ocean, you know, I equate the water in that tide, right? Saying was something about like, you know, like when the tide of it, like when the waves of ignorance are kind of like coming in, you can try to stand at the shore with a mop, you know, and stop the tide from coming in. You know, you could try that. I think it'll be, you know, an exercise in futility, you know, or you can find, you know, some sturdy ground and you can go and, you know, erect a lighthouse, meaning a beacon of light, so that those who are on those tides of ignorance, right, they can see a lighthouse that can direct them to safety, direct them away from the cliffs that are killing our community, right? So I say that to say, when I speak on ignorance or violence, that's kind of like the analogy that I use. I don't think that we are going to get out there and be able to save people on an individual basis. I think that we need to erect community groups where we can protect one another. And that meaning communities of families that all share the same values. And that has to start small and build up. And everybody on the outside of that, like, I think that you have to look at with a certain, I'm not going to say hostility, but until they've been transformed, because I'm learning more and more that it really is an exercise in futility to try to organize the dead. The people who you need to be trying to organize are the awakened, okay, right? And there's all different types of things that will wake people up, you know, the atmospheric conditions, right, that people can see, those who have, you know, ears to hear and eyes to see, they'll get woken up. And the thing is, when people wake up, you need to have something in place where they can come into for shelter, right? So as people wake up on their own, but like I'm not in any false pretense, brother Elliot, that we are going to be able to save everyone. And that we are going to be able to protect everyone. A great deal of it just kind of like is what it is. But those of us who know what it is, I think that we need to be working together to organize ourselves and build community that can protect us, right? We need to be erecting those light towers for people to come in. But I don't think that, you know, we're going to be able to do anything to stop kind of like the tides of violence from coming in. And I would just equate that again to standing at the shore with a mop to try to stop the waves from coming in. Like, it's an exercise in futility. That's just my perspective. I think with the limited energy and resources that we have to use them wisely to protect ourselves, right? Because, you know, self-preservation is the first law of nature.
Listen, I agree totally on what you're saying, because we, when you say it's an exercise in futility, just like I said before, this country was established in violence. The people that established it here and forced other people off of their land were violent, and it's starting to consume them. Just like Malcolm said years ago, the chickens are coming home to roost. So, you know, the best thing we can do is, just like you said, start establishing things so our people can be attracted to it. Throwing the life preserver out, so to speak, so they can have something to grab hold to. Because this tide is coming, and it's here. So the best thing we can do is prepare ourselves one way or the other. Richard, before we transition, any more you want to throw into the mix?
No, I think that we, you know, because I hope that before, you know, the actual convention take place, we can have Brother Omawale come back and give us an update on what's going on. And at the same time, you know, as you heard, you know, Ellie, you can't put me with the brother, because this man is working. Like, he telling me he's writing a paper due Wednesday, doing this due tomorrow, and then been up all day with 2-3 children and a wife. No, I ain't in that league. So I ain't even faking the funk on that one. But I do want to, again, congratulate you and the team up to this point for what we've been hearing and what you've been doing in relationship to making this here historic event happen.
Appreciate it, Brother Rich.
Again, before we leave, We've been in conversation with the Vice Senuti of Philadelphia Chapter of Afrocentricity International, Brother Omar Wali Africa, the big event, historic event, that's slated for August 8th and 9th, RBG Centennial Conference, and the Global Accord for the Development of the Sovereign African State. Brother Omawale, tell the people how they can get involved, how they can get the virtual tickets. Go ahead. The floor is yours.
First and foremost, thanks again, Brother Rich and Brother Elliot, just for extending the platform and for allowing me to come on and speak to your audience. I encourage everybody that is, you know, within the shot of my voice, if you can hear this, you know, come out, be a part of history. This really is a historic event. By definition, right, a centennial only happens once in a lifetime, right? You're only going to celebrate a 100-year anniversary once in a lifetime. So in our lifetime, this is a moment where we can all be a part of making this history. So I would encourage you to go out and get your tickets today. The website is www.rbgcentennial.com. That's RBG Centennial, spelled CENTENNIAL.com. All right, family, I appreciate y'all for having me on.
Well, Omar Wali, we'll talk to you soon and get you back on all before right. the date before kickoff.
That sounds good.
Peace.
Okay, peace.
We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll move into the second portion of our program. It's been a lot of things happening on social media and in the news and on the television the past week and a half, maybe 2 weeks, dealing with some of our young people, the athletes and entertainers that have been making statements that have been viewed as anti-Semitic. They have been attacked and vilified publicly in the media. We're going to talk with our next guest about some of these statements and put some facts to the assertions, and let's kick this around a little bit. When we take a break, and when we come back from break, we'll have the executive director of PANAFEST on the motherland in Ghana, the executive director of the PANAFEST Foundation, Rabbi Kohen Netanya Halevi, and we're going to talk about some of these issues, and we might surprise you. We might mix in some of the topics centered around PANAFEST also. You can get involved in the conversation and the dialogue by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. Time for an awakening. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening, Time for an Awakening, with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
The Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
I transformed a $24,000 a year oddjob handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one of the tangible transformations I've created for entrepreneurs in various industries around the country. If this isn't what you think of when you think of accounting and business consulting, then get ready to take down this invaluable information. Are you an entrepreneur suffering with a stagnating company? Have headache customers, staff, or vendors? Are you rebounding from a loss and need help achieving your unrealized potential? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? Hi, my name is Nataki Kanban. If you're ready to go beyond advising and coaching and get results, then call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions recommend and implement the best comprehensive sales, administrative, human resources, accounting, and operations to help you grow into your vision for yourself and your company. Again, from anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072 or pull us up on your device right now and book your free consultation at www.newbusinesssolutions.com. And just mention you heard this special announcement on Time for an Awakening.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
I must be measured by my soul. The mind is the standard of the man. With this new sense of dignity and this new sense of self-respect, a new Negro came into being with a new determination to suffer, to struggle, to sacrifice, and even to die if necessary in order to be free.
Hang on to the world as it spins around.
All our people righteous by nature, wicked by circumstance, so we are going to try to save our people. Take control of our communities. Anybody that want justice, come out of those parties that won't give you justice, and let's have a justice party and set up our own candidates, run them in the cities. Take down the weak, blood suckers of the poor, and cast them out, and set up people that will fight for justice for us.
Because there's a whole lot of illusions about Africa's relationship with other people in the world. There's a whole lot of illusions about our relationship to the religions in the world. And these belief systems that had its origin in Africa, all of them, and there is no exception, turned on African people. I said there is no exception. And there's one thing you have to get through your mind and keep it. Nothing that ever came from the European mind was meant to do anything but facilitate European domination of the world. And I said, there's no exception. Everything that was brought into this continent, everything, every idea, every so-called religion, was meant to dominate and to control. The Arabs had no illusions about it. The Europeans had no illusions about it. You were the ones with the illusions. And yet every element that went into the making of every major religion in the world started in Africa. Why is it that you are so naive? You let people redress something that you invented, sell it back to you, and enslave you through it.
if we are to defeat the European, if we are to master this earth and take back this earth from the European, then we must outthink the European. We must then be creative. That puts the learning emphasis on the how-ness, the how to think as such, and to the use of knowledge as a tool of mastery. So it's a very different kind of thing. As a result, you see, the control and the paternalism of Europeans over black people. You see, the other thing that we must recognize, even if the European becomes good and nice and accepts us and so forth, the fact that he would still be in control creates a what we might call a benevolent paternalism, which still to a great degree helps to maintain this passive mode of thinking, this passive mode of knowledge.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 8:15 here in the city of Philadelphia. And those two passages, Richard, by Elder John Henry Clark and Amos Wilson, couldn't pick the better one to lead into this conversation tonight. Everybody's familiar with some of the statements that DeSean Jackson, football player here in the city of Philadelphia, the post that he made. He didn't say anything. He put a post up, and the comments made by Nick Cannon. A couple of his brother athletes came to his defense. One of them was Steven Jackson, the former basketball player that used to play for a couple of teams. He's now retired, but he said some things in DeSean Jackson's defense. Before I bring in our guest, historian and executive director of Panifest Foundation, Rabbi Kohen Netanya Halevi, let me play for the listening audience Stephen Jackson's comments to what happened to DeSean Jackson, if I can get this thing right here.
Just read a statement that the Philadelphia Eagles posted regarding DeSean Jackson comments. He was trying to educate himself, educate people, and he's speaking the truth, right? He's speaking the truth. You know he don't hate nobody, but he's speaking the truth of what of the facts that he know and try to educate others. But y'all don't want us to educate ourselves. If it's talking about the black race, y'all ain't saying nothing about it. They killing us, police killing us, and treating us like shit, racism at an all-time high. But ain't none of you NFL owners spoke up on that. Ain't none of you teams spoke up on that. But the same team had a receiver that say the word "nick" to say "nigger" publicly, and they gave him.
And let me, before we go to our guest, play comments made in reference to both of the men by Charles Barkley. Listen to what he says in reference to what those brothers stated.
Listen, DeSean Jackson, Steven Jackson, Nick Cannon, Ice Cube, man, what the hell are y'all doing? Like, y'all want racial equality. We all do. I don't understand how insulting another group helps our cause. And the only person called y'all on it was Kareem. We can't allow black people to be prejudiced also. Especially if we're asking for white folks to respect us, give us economic opportunity, and things like that. I'm so disappointed in these men, but I don't understand how you beat hatred with more hatred. That stuff should never come up in your vocabulary, and it should never come up in your heart. I don't understand it. I'm never going to accept it. And I'm asking you guys, I'm begging you guys, man, you guys are famous. You got a platform. We got to do better, man. I want allies. I don't want to alienate anybody. And to take shots at the Jewish race, the white race, I just don't like it because it's not right. And I had to call them on it because it's really been on my heart.
Richard, asking for white folks to give us something. Come on, mm-hmm. You know, this mentality. You know, he made comments about what they said, but he didn't go into the content of what was stated. The content of what was stated is what we're going to talk about this evening with our guest, historian and executive director of Panifest Foundation, Rabbi Kohen Netanya Halevi. I think he's with us from Ghana. Let me see if this is him. Rabbi Halevi, is this you?
Yes, I'm on. Do you hear me?
Yes, sir. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
And I know it's kind of late over there in Ghana. So what is it, 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock?
Yes, I'm past 12, you know, about 12, going on 12:20.
Oh,
yes.
I'm glad you're able to be with myself and Brother Richard.
How you doing, everybody?
Yes. Oh, excellent. Very good, my brother.
Rabbi Halevi, mm-hmm. let's look at this. Both of the athlete, the entertainer, both young brothers, DeSean Jackson, Nick Cannon, and a few others that didn't really make the news that came out and verbally supported them, said two things and had two things in common in what they stated, is that the original Hebrew Israelites were black, and that started a firestorm. Saying their remarks are anti-Semitic, and they've been forced to apologize, and then the athletes respect took money, in fact, took money from both of these men. Talk about that point, because this hasn't been talked about in the media. It's been the muddy of the waters, talking about, oh, Hitler, and there's remarks by Hitler, but the comments is never talked about these things starting from black people. Talk about that from the historical standpoint and some of the work that you have done over the years.
Thank you very much, my brother. First of all, let me thank you for inviting me on the show to be with you and your listening audience this evening. And let me begin by giving all respect to the all source of life and the substance of all of our being, the creator of the universe, and to the spirit of our great African ancestors upon whose shoulders we stand. I thank you for giving me an opportunity to just share with the listening audience this evening and speaking with you from Ghana, West Africa. You know, the subject matter is not a new subject matter. And it seems that in cycles, these things come around, especially when we see any meaningful attempt of African people to rise up and to free themselves and to free their minds and to be able to enjoy the liberties that any other people have. To self-determination. I think that even a muted argument, when we stick to the facts historically about the content of what these two brothers, and there's more than two, but, you know, let's say with Nick Cannon and Stephen Jackson and LaShawn Jackson, to take those three names, which you just mentioned, you know, these are athletes and entertainers who come from the African world. We know the whole story of our ancestors being brought to the United States of America in particular and the Western Hemisphere in general, and the idea of taking a free people that were captured and turning them into a commodity and selling them into enslavement was a process that didn't only involve a physical activity, but a mental and psychological one. So for the memory of the African man, the black man, to be taken away from him and be denied him and to have history books for centuries to be reconstructed, to actually take the African out of his own humanity, his own culture, his own dignity and respect, and to define him as no people, a Negro, give him a new name, erase his consciousness, and not allow for us to receive any light of intelligence and knowledge of ourselves for over centuries. Naturally, when that people seek, as any human being would do, to come into their self-respect and being, and raise up their head and begin to define themselves and exercise the right, human right of self-determination, there are those who feel threatened with that because they have been part of the conspiracy to deny us that. So the historical facts have been established a long time ago that the actual people of the book, the original African Hebrew Israelites, were a people of African origin. That Israel and Egypt are in Africa. Many historians have joined the conspiracy to remove Egypt out of Africa. Many of our scholars have focused and concentrated on reclaiming Egypt. as an African civilization, a product of the African mind, and a product of the African humanity. And so we're engaged in that fight. So you can imagine if we're engaged in that fight, what has been a part of that conspiracy is also projecting that the ancient people of Israel, Palestine, that whole area were a people that belonged to a European origin. And that has been proven many times over by our scholars and other scholars, even Jewish scholars, that that is not the case. We have recent articles by Jewish scholarship that have confirmed through scientific research that many of the Ashkenazi Jews that practice Judaism today, their DNA proves to be of European. Stop. This is not a racist statement. We're in the age of science and technology. When we look at the geographical location and look at the history that is laid out in the Torah and the ancient scriptures, if we free them from the racist interpretations that have been perpetrated through Judeo-Christian theology in the Western Hemisphere, we find clearly that all the people and the nations in that book, in the Old Testament especially, that is, as it's called, is in Africa, it's in Egypt, it's in Canaan, it's in Ethiopia, even the Kushite kingdoms, the Mesopotamia, and all those areas. These things have been long proved by scholars, both African scholars and European scholars, who knew it before us because they covered it up. So African scholars have proven these points, and our minds are being opened, and our young minds are being encouraged, that they don't belong to a slave history. They're not a no people that belong to a Negro race that doesn't exist, that they belong to the ancient peoples of the world. And they have a right to claim that. They have a right to stand up without being punished, without being put back on the auction block and being sold back into slavery and made to feel that they're still commodities. It's unfortunate for these brothers because they're not historians and they're not in the world of academia, that they're in a world where people still practice, you know, commodity salesmanship in the entertainment and sports world, that they have owners. And sometimes those owners feel that they have made those players and made their lives. So when they come out on the political scene, come out on the scene culturally and socially, they're made and reminded that they don't own themselves. And so therefore, they don't exercise the freedom to express their minds. And that's why it's important that the community stands up on the truths that we know, because they're not operating in a vacuum. These young men have read, they've studied, they've been talked to, they've been influenced, they've studied documents. And so they're in the knowledge of unfold. They're in the process of coming into a knowledge of themselves. And if other people are offended by that, then the world has to come to grips with the black man awakening, with the black man arising, coming outside of the plantation and coming outside of the boundaries that we've been defined falsely in and coming into our own. And there's no off limits with that. Everybody knows that if we talk about not everyone, but many people are coming into the knowledge, and many people already know that if we're talking about the Shemitic people, which this term anti-Semite originates from, because there's no such thing as a Semite in the Bible. I only know Semite to be something related to Semi. And so, but when you read the definition of it, it is linked with the term Shem, one of the sons of Noah, if those who know biblical narrative, we want to follow biblical history where this argument is originating from. And when we think about that, when the term Sem is even extracted from Shem, which is to some people's convenience, we find that the people associated with it by definition are all of the people that are supposed to come from the line of Shem. We even have the Canaanites who come from the line of Ham, according to that biblical narrative. We even have the Ethiopians who come from the sons of Ham, according to that narrative. All of them are defined as Semite people. Like, but according to scripture, we're dealing with the son Shem. So you have automatically a reconstruction of history by the mixing of those two names. One name, the Semite, because it doesn't exist in the Bible, it actually falls within the power of the one who created that term to define it. And in the definition, there are contradictions. And the contradictions, I say, because the people who identify with being Semitic both come from the Kemetic or Ham line and from the Shemitic, the Shem line. So right away, you have a confusion. But when you deal with the pure language of the Torah, we're talking about the line of Shem, then we have plenty of people who belong to that line, not just those who practice Judaism. There's a number of ethnic groups, there's a number of nationalities that belong to that. And certainly the black man, the original man, is not excluded from any of those people that belong to the lines of Shem or Ham or the Kemetic people or the Shemitic people, because we can claim all of that. So we have our right to claim our territory, you know, in terms of our identity as a people. It is not meant to offend people. If people are offended, that's not our fault. We've taken the blame. We've apologized to the world for standing up with our dignity and our pride. But who has apologized to us for what was done to us through conspiracy that everyone participated in, all nations participated in keeping the black man down? As our great scholar John Henry Clark mentioned, whether you are a Muslim, whether you are a Christian, whether you are a Jew, and if you are white or of European extraction or come from the peoples of Europe, you have participated in enjoying the stepping on the neck of the black man and keeping the black man down, and the conspiracy of advocating that the black man has no history. So if the day has come that the black man is now awakening and standing up and finding out his history and find out that his history is in the pages of other people's library that they have claimed as their own, then is it an offense to the finder, the owner of that information, that he has found it, or to the person who has taken it? So if there's a problem with the awakening and a reawakening of some of our young people, whether they are in the athletic world, whether they're in the entertainment world, or whether they're in the scholastic world, academic world, or wherever they are, wherever they find it, so if there's a problem with information, then put it to our scholars. Why don't the scholars come together? Our African scholars are well-prepared. Those who know the history, historians are well-prepared. Their academic, you know, protocols are laid down whereby things are proven scientifically, and let that debate take place. But to be putting people up on pedestals and ridiculing them, criticizing them for speaking their heart, speaking their mind, I didn't hear the full substance of the full debate and dialogue that happened with Nick Cannon. But the portion I heard, I was still waiting for the hatred. I didn't hear a hatred in there.
I know.
I didn't hear derogatory statements in there. I mean, if there were, then it needs to be talked about, it needs to be debated in the proper forums, whereby we take all of these accusations out of it and let the facts be laid bare for themselves.
I fully agree. I got a couple calls here. Richard, you wanted to jump in?
You know, I just wanted to throw it in, you know, Rabbi, and only because you're, you know, and I seen you have an interview and putting together Panifest for next year. And I'm looking at these cultural entertainers who are of this particular generation. And as you say, are taking the knowledge and projecting it. And as it was said, in their platform, it upsets me, you know, that they're coming of age and they're utilizing their cultural agency, which we've been looking for, right? To be able to exert that on us as a people and have us move forward. Not that they're leaders, but they have the agency to speak their truth. And it'd be, you know, if it was going to be challenged, as you said, it'd be challenged on a matter of the facts, not a matter of because they're entertainers and using their cultural production, their cultural creativity to be able to share that with the broader market. So silence that, you know, really speak to the need for us to continue to develop infrastructure around our culture, because you see that they're saying you can be able to provide your creative talent, but you can't be able to say anything with that creative talent. That's that just rubs me. And I just say, I guess I said all that to get your reflection. And, you know, am I off on that?
No, you're not off on that. And I think that you're absolutely correct, especially when the contradiction exists. That these same producers in the entertainment world and those who, you know, support and help lift up these same entertainers have no problem when they denigrate, you know, black people, for those who do, not all who do. But when they're using derogatory terms and describing our women and describing us as a people, calling the N-word and all of these things, there's no outcry with that, you know. And so when we talk about standards are standards. Morals are morals. And as I said, one of the greatest tools of communication that we have as a people has been through the arts for us. It's been through our music, through our drama. And that's how we told our story, because the history books in the educational institutions haven't told our story. They've told us a lie. They've miseducated us instead of educated us. And not only miseducated us, they've perpetrated the miseducation on themselves. And that's why the shock is so tremendous and traumatic when we uncover these truths and people, you know, get traumatized by it, because they themselves have believed their own lies. And this doesn't belong to the people who practice Judaism alone. This is to those that belong to the white world, Asiatic world, you know, other all non-black people have gotten to see black people outside of our character and who it is that we are, because our history has been erased, and not only from our minds, but from most of the general public's mind. And I think that you're on it when you say our young people, when coming into a knowledge of themselves, are using the arts to spread information and spread knowledge. And as I said, black people have proven our humanity to all of humanity. We have proven that we can get along with all people in spite of how we've been treated by people. It's time for us to receive that love from other people, and people let us know that they also support us in our right to self-determination as a people.
Let's go to 404. 404, are you there, Atlanta? 404?
Yes, sir. Y'all hear me?
Yes. Go ahead. I can hear you.
Hey, right on, man. I'm glad my people are waking up, man. But I think we got to stick with my man Nick Cannon, man, because he's about to commit suicide, man, over this crap, man. Okay? And we got to keep just telling the truth, man, because these fake Jews, fake Zionists that's running the world, they tie them up, man. Okay, look how the universe can shut their whole system down now. No sport and play. Okay, they claiming the NBA done lost $1 billion. Okay, just for the end of this season alone. So it's good, man. They time is up, brother. Okay, and I sent you Elliot. It's so much stuff going on, man. I could be a wide range of conversation about this whole thing. And for Barkley and Kareem and the rest of them clowns that's doing the master's business, speaking for the white man, that's called meritorious manumission, man. Okay? And I think all we should write Viacom, because Viacom do own BET, whether y'all know it or not. I researched Viacom, and I sent it to y'all. But they time up, man. Them brothers telling the truth. Everybody's telling the truth. Once we start, everybody waking up and start telling these folks who we are, man, it's a done deal. We got it, man. They tie them up, man. And, oh, yeah, I sent y'all an article about Africa. They making 6 different cars in 6 different countries in Africa, man. I sent y'all the article, man. Okay? Bro, they tie them up, man. They time is up. Hallelujah. They tie them up, man. Elliot and Richard, y'all finally, my man John Lewis gone on in, man. So can't be picking on him no more for what he did or didn't do. Okay, and with this nonviolent crap, okay, because I ain't with nonviolence. I can't think they kind of messed us up with this nonviolence. Well, if the white man slap us beside the head, we supposed to sit there and take it? No, not no more, man. Okay, so it's a good time to be alive, man. What y'all think about that, man?
Well, I do agree. It's an excellent time to be alive, but we got to, while the door is open, we got to make moves. We got to push the door open for our people. It's a lot of things happening. Say that again.
I won't throw this out there too fast, and I'll be quiet. You know, in North Carolina, that little city, they supposed to be giving these folks so-called reparation, man. Do Scotty know about that?
I'm not sure, but that'll be a topic that he'll probably talk about on his program.
Yes, that was in Asheville, North Carolina.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I said that was in Asheville, North Carolina. The city council voted that they would give the black residents of that city reparations and their descendants. So that is great progress that is being made. And as you said, this is a window that's being opened. We must know what time it is. And I don't mean, you know, the year or the calendar date. I mean, what time it is that we are in,
yes,
in prophecy and in destiny as a people. And it is very important that we use that time wisely to organize ourselves and be serious about who it is that we are as a people, because this uprising and this uplifting and this ascension that we are in as a people has to become a practice. It's not just the rhetoric. We just can't talk the talk. We have to walk the walk. It is time for us to focus on ourselves and to be not distracted by what other people are saying or how they feel about us loving ourselves. We must love ourselves unapologetically. We must pursue our agenda unapologetically. And that agenda is not a hate agenda. It is not adverse to anybody else, but by us being consumed with our own selves and learning how to put this African family back together again, It must not be apologized for if people are offended by the effort of us organizing ourselves and rising up. Our intent is not to be anti anybody, but we also are saying that we must be respected and must not be confronted with people being anti us because we want to be us and not them.
Thank you for your call, bro.
That's all they do. There's one more point, man.
Go ahead.
That's all they do is steal our heritage, man. Now with this thing with Oklahoma talking about giving the land back to the indigenous, these damn $5 Indians showing up like they Indians and want to take that damn our land from Oklahoma, man. So y'all be aware of that too, Elliot. With these fake damn $5 Indians talking about they indigenous. And they fight as damn snow. They always try to steal our heritage, man. I'm sick of it, bro.
I can understand. Thanks for your contribution, Wes.
That's all.
All right. Let's go to Phoenix. 602-602.
Yes, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And good evening to the rabbi.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, good brother. You know, the tactic, you know, is whenever we say we are pro-us, the first thing they label, oh, you're racist. You know, the other day I went into a store with an Arab guy who owned the store. And I told him, I said, hey, I want a black cigar. You know what he told me? Oh, you sound like you are racist. That's the first thing he said. They spin it back to you. You know what I said? I said, what? Because I want a black cigar, but I'm racist. Man, shut up. You know? But these people, you know, Charles Barkley and Karim Abdul-Jabbar, they're not listening to the ground, you know. If they were listening to the ground, they would hear the rumble of the people. And these Jewish people, they know who to scare. They know who to approach with this foolishness. They'll never address what Benjamin Franklin said about them. They leave that alone. They get quiet. They never address that book that Henry Ford wrote, The International Jew. You know, a lot of people don't know it was Henry Ford Truck. That when that war broke out in Europe, it was Henry Ford Truck that was taking them German troops to the front line. See? They'll not address the secret relationship between the blacks and the Jews, that book that the Nation of Islam put out that is so well documented with their Jewish historians. And they'll run when they tell them about Dr. Tony Martin, the Jewish onslaught, the book that he put out. They'll run like roaches, you see? But they know who to scare with the foolishness. But the people have moved ahead of them. We're sick and tired of these people. These people been draining our blood. All these NFL teams, all these basketball teams, you check, a lot of them are owned by Jews. Still sucking the blood of black people. Still. Anyway, good brothers, you take care. Thank you so much for this program. Keep on keeping on.
Thank you for your call.
Right.
We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, you can join the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation, and we're going to get into a little bit of PANIFEST celebration on the continent in Ghana that's been going on for the past 25 years, I think, Rabbi.
Yeah, 27.
27, okay.
Now, oh, yeah, 28, going into 28 now.
Okay, we're going to talk a little bit about that, and we can continue the discussion. If somebody has any questions or comments in reference to what we've been talking about, you can get involved in the conversation again by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. We got call on hold. Just hold on till after the break. We'll be right back.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening. Time for an Awakening with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Escape the digital plantation. Abibitumi.com, Abibitumi.tv, Abibitumi.tv.com, Abibitumi.store are here for you. You are ready to be free of non-African social media. Don't run from danger, run to safety. Abibitumi.com is here for you. You are ready to be free of digital plantations to control your own products. Abibitumi.store is here for you. ABIBITUMI, Black Power, ABIBITUMI. The only word you need to know to join your global Commits You Black family, to join your interconnected Commits You Black communities. Escape the digital plantation now. Abibitumi.com, Abibitumi.tv, Abibitumi.tv.com, Abibitumi.store. We are here for you. Escape the digital plantation.
Know that this problem needs to be solved, and we can't keep relegating it to generation after generation because a few of us got a little money, a few of us got positions, a few of us have wealth, while the masses of our people are going steadily down. No one man can rise above the condition of his people. The brother said responsibility. Is it that we should let them take responsibility to do for us, or should we pool the knowledge that's at the table, the power that's in our community, the wealth that's in our community to change the harsh reality of black life in America? We have to do the job of fulfilling the black agenda. Thank you.
We have a message to the black man, because the black man today is a man who has been made now almost into a laughing stock. Nobody takes the black man serious. We're just used to be somebody's tool. We are the sportsmen, we're the singers and the dancers, and we're also labeled as the pimps and the criminals and the drug dealers and the killers and the vagabonds of society, we're the bogeymen of British society and other Western systems. And we want to dispel that lie and destroy those myths and put the black man back on the map where we belong. Who is the black man? The black man is the original man. If it wasn't for the black man, no other men could be on this planet. We are the fathers of humanity. We gave birth to all of you.
We are the watchmen on the wall. You are too. You watch with a political eye. We watch from a spiritual eye. But we're supposed to be the watchmen for the people that vote for us. The sad thing is the people vote, but they don't give you the money to run your campaigns. So here come big business.
How are you? How are you, Judge? How are you, Alderman? How are you, Congressman? How are you? How are you, Reverend? Well, what can I do for you today, Reverend?
You can't do nothing for me. See, that's what we got to be careful of. We got to be careful of who we bow down to. But see, when you get in your congregation and you talk this Jesus, this powerful Jesus that's sitting at the right hand of the Father with all power in his hand, then you go with your hat in your hand to the governor, to the mayor, to the president, begging for some crumbs. You have sold your God cheap.
That's right.
And you make the white man downtown disrespect all of us.
Yeah.
Time for an Awakening is a proud part of the Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent black digital and podcasting platform.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 8:51 here in the city of Philadelphia. We're in conversation with historian and the executive director of Panifest Foundation, Rabbi Kohen Netanya Halevi. You can get involved in the conversation. The time we have left, Rabbi, I'm kind of late. It's 1 o'clock over there in Ghana. But you can get involved in the conversation here by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. Richard, before we go to the phones and back to Rabbi Halevi, let me, you had mentioned this to me, but I want to play this clip for our listening audience just in case they didn't hear it before.
That's right. The Jewish rabbis came to my home. Don't cut me off. I'm not lying.
That's right.
Cut off the liar.
That's right.
Right.
Who lies with every breath.
Yes, sir.
Don't cut me off.
That's right.
Right.
One great rabbi said to me, "It's not for you to criticize us. That's for me to do." In other words, nigger.
Right, sir.
He didn't call me that. But telling me at my dinner table,
yes, sir,
that I don't have a right to criticize him. I don't come for you to you asking you for my for authority.
That's right.
That's right.
You didn't authorize me.
No, sir.
I'm authorized by a power bigger than all of you.
Right.
So he told me,
yes, sir,
deliver the message.
Deliver. Go ahead.
And if you do it not, you are not
delivering the message.
Richard, that kind of goes along with what you had stated to Rabbi Levy in reference to the way they deal with people now, and some of the statements that have been made, where they put them out there for public flogging or public whipping, in reference to some of the statements that was made. But that also goes to what Rabbi Levy said about them attacking entertainers and athletes, and not historians dealing with the facts of the matter, in reference to some of the statements that was made.
Yeah, it's definitely about, you know, the public image, and I have to keep coming back to, you know Rabbi's role in PANIFEST, because we were just earlier in a discussion about the power of our cultural output, right? Mm-hmm. The power of our cultural production, right? The power of it to drive our political and economic security, you know, sure. And the whole thing around and PANIFEST being one of those vehicles that purpose was to reemphasize that. Correct me if I'm wrong, Rabbi, in the sense of that.
You're absolutely correct. You're absolutely correct. You know, every PANIFEST edition, which is every 2 years, we choose a theme. But our reconcurring theme, that is really our mission, is the reemergence of African civilization and reuniting the African family. So we feel that all that we do is based upon that, using art and culture as the medium to accomplish these two goals. We realize that in order for the emergence or reemergence of African civilization, it can only come about through the empowerment of our people. And the empowerment of our people can only come about by African unity. When we unite as a people and we practice our own culture and we are proud of our own culture and we consciously use that culture for the political, economic, and social reinforcement empowerment of ourselves, then we reclaim our dignity and our status amongst the nations of the world. So PANIFEST has, for 13 previous editions, over the past 27 years, have brought brothers and sisters together from all of the African world, from all over Africa, from all of the diaspora, be it in the Americas or Europe or even other parts of Asia, to come together and celebrate our synergy through culture, through art, through music, through scholarship. So we have drama, which is how the festival started, basically through drama, for African artists, writers, producers, to tell our own story, since our story has not been told. And what has been told is a story, is a lie. So the first editions of it were focusing on drama. But then we realized that our artistic expression is so diversified that we needed an expression and a platform for all of our artists to come together. And then, so that we're not just perceived as just artists, and we're proud of that, because some of our ancient sciences teach us that music and dance is sacred. It's not just for entertainment. It's been reduced to a category of just entertainment in Western culture, but music and art is sacred. So we bring people together, thousands of Africans together, to be able to talk to each other and to reacquaint ourselves with each other as an African family. Because not only were we mislabeled in the Western Hemisphere, those Africans who were enslaved, but colonialism was an enslavement. And the redemarcation of the African continent into nation states, breaking up our kingdom societies, whereby we rule through various kingdoms and through our traditional systems, have caused us to come into an era where we have put up false boundaries in our minds to separate ourselves. So the festival seeks to bring us back together again, that we can learn the members of our body and the members of our family. And through that familiarity, it is easier to bring about and forge a unity. So the next edition of PANIFEST coming up in 2021, we have chosen the theme, Securing the African Family, Our Soul, Our Health, and Our Wealth. We realize that coming through this pandemic of this COVID-19, and now with the advent of the onslaught and the raising of the ugly head of white supremacy overtly again, that we need to be able to have a platform where we examine where we are as a people, and the strategies that will take us forward. And that strategy must begin spiritually by examining our soul, even our own spiritual expressions and how our theology and whatever religion that we practice or spiritual system that we practice must be a liberation theology that starts from the center of our experience as African people. And we don't have to apologize for that, because all of the major Western religions started or emanated out of the concept of African spiritual systems and truths. So with that, the festival will last for 8 days from July 23rd up until August 2nd. And we have rituals that help to bring about the atonement and the healing process of the African family. We have a three-day colloquium where our scholars will come from all over the world to present papers, you know, as it relates to a clear, crystal clear analysis of the condition that our people are in around our theme, and tangible resolutions to make recommendations for our community and our people to go forward to address those challenges with real solutions. And then we will have the cultural expressions. We have the drama, we have the dance, we have the music, we have the interaction, social interaction, we have economic forums, entrepreneurship forums, and more importantly, we'll have workshops on how do we reintegrate back with Mother Africa and how do we turn our attention back to Mother Africa. Last year, 2019, was proclaimed the year of return by Ghana. And we had millions of Africans that came back to Africa, hundreds of thousands of them for their first time coming from the diaspora. And it was a great awakening. And so we realized that that momentum is growing and it must be made a real contact with Mother Africa now. See, just as we were not thrown into darkness overnight, and it took phases and it took centuries, it took years to fashion the Negro mind and fill it with darkness and to fill it with ignorance. And so it's going to take time to bring ourselves back into enlightenment. And so Panifest and the institutional age is still an infant at 27, because to build an institution, it takes years. So we at the Panifest Foundation, its board members, its supporters, the traditional people on the ground here, the government of Ghana, the traditional leaders, the kings, the queen mothers, the brothers and sisters in the diaspora, the great scholars who come throughout the years to support Panifest, to help build this institution, are encouraged that the momentum is growing and more people are paying attention to it. And it continues to serve as a vehicle for our artists, both young and old, new and seasoned, famous and unfamous, to come to be able to share with the African family through their art form the celebration of African perfection and African resilience.
Let's go to 646. 646.
Yeah, hold tough, Brother Richard and Brother Elliot, and to your guests. Right quick, in regards to this whole situation with DeSean Jackson and the rest of these individuals, I think the biggest problem is that we don't have the scholars and the elders coming to the defense of these brothers. You know, for some reason, we always allow the Jew to get away with defining us and telling us what we can say and what we can't say in regards to this whole anti-Semitic thing. You know what I mean? We have more than enough scholars and elders that can prove this whole Semitic myth and debunk it and prove that we are the Semitic people and not the Jew. And until we do that, we are just basically going to stay in this same box of being disrespected and, as I call it, bullied by these devils. So whereby it's a situation to where if a Jew say that you can't do something, then your black behind better not do it, or there's going to be consequences and repercussions, and you're going to have Negroes like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and the rest jump out and attack you. So until we address and deal with that in the manner in which we are supposed to, it's just going to keep on going on and on and on. And, you know, we just have to be honest and stop the disrespect that we're being treated with in regards to who we are as a people. So until we do that, it's just going to continue. And, you know, me, myself, personally, I'm not for the disrespect. I'm not going to allow no Jew to define me. And I'm going to speak up every chance I get in regards to I am the original Semitic people and not this damn fake Jew. So I just wanted to address that in regards to this. And I'd like to thank the brother that's on the phone as your guest for speaking up, because it's going to take people like that to be able to honor us as a people. And I'll just leave you with this. The brother and scholar Greg Carr, who has numerous times been on Nick Cannon's program, who knows Nick Cannon and all of that, is someone that I have indirectly known for over 30-some years, who knows the truth in regards to the Semitic people. He studied under Dr. Ben and Dr. Clark and others. And here it is. He doesn't even have the decency nor the respect to stand up for Brother Nick, because, as always, the white man owns this Negro. So until we find black people that's willing to open up their mouth to challenge this Jew and not care about losing their little bit of position that they have in this country, we're just going to constantly be disrespected.
Well, you know what I would like to do, because I know the time is short and it's getting very late, early morning here and after one. But I want to just address something I think is very important in this dialogue. Some of the misconception also lies in the fact that of the myth that the Hebrew Israelites, you know, of the Torah were a purely Shemitic people. It is not so. The Hebrew people, like the people of Mesopotamia and all, there was a great relationship between Shem and Kem. That is the Kemetic Shemitic people. And that is what the ancient Hebrews were made up of. That there was no such thing as a pure Shemitic line that they call Semitic. Joseph married an Egyptian princess who was the daughter of an Egyptian priest. And the whole tribe of Joseph was Egyptian Hebrew, Egyptian Israelite. Moses married Ethiopian, Midianite, Cushite. He was taught by her father, a priest. The term for priest in the Torah is Kohen. First time that name is mentioned, or that title, is with Melchizedek, who was also Semitic. Second time is mentioned is with Moses' father-in-law, Jethro, who was his teacher for 40 years in the wilderness, who showed him the mountain of God, where God dwells, before he got his revelation to deliver his people through a burning bush, a shrine. So the tribe of Judah, almost six of the sons of the 12 tribes of Israel, married into the Kemetic line. So at no time were the children of Israel, the Hebrew Israelites, ever a purely Shemitic people. They were Kemetic and Shemitic, and that's biblical fact and historical fact. So there's no such thing as some pure line of Shemitic people that are superior. So any one of our people who wake up to the understanding of their ancient history and pedigree, who want to claim the Shemitic line or the Kemetic line, they're within their right. And so we only see the limitations of mingling with Japhet in Bible narrative and genealogy. So every black person has a right to claim the Kemetic or the Shemitic line, which comes from the line of Shem and Ham. As I said, the Semitic is a bastardized terminology from Shem, and it's how we play with these social tools of discrimination today. So the better education, the better enlightenment, it is better we argue from a point of truth. And that's why I say the scholars should come to the table and talk to each other and speak the truth. And therefore, whatever our young people do or older people do, and propagating a knowledge of themselves and feeling their own self-pride and everything, if there's a question about what someone is saying, keep it to the facts and let the facts speak for themselves. And so I just wanted to make that little contribution, because a lot of times we act as if the Hebrew Israelites are a Shemitic line or Semitic line of people that only had that lineage, and the lineage is not so. It was a mixture of the Kemetic and the Shemitic line, a mixture of the cultures of Egypt and Ethiopia, all of that. But with the Europeans trying to obscure and de-Africanize the Bible and the Torah, as if Africans had nothing to do with that. And our legacy only belonged in the jungles of Africa with no religion, no moral structures. All of our scholars have proven these things wrong. And they have proven the ancient civilizations and the kingdoms that we were responsible for erecting. Whether that was in the Mesopotamian era of the Tigris and the Euphrates, whether that was in the Nile or the Niger, or the Mississippi or the Delta, our people have been consistent. That history is recorded. Our resilience is recorded. So we should not back down. We should not apologize and not feel ashamed nor put to shame for proclaiming the truth. When we don't stand for truth, truth stands for itself. And when we stand with truth, we only stand strong.
Jay, thank you for your contribution, man. Rabbi, I love you before I let you go, because this has not kept you a long time. Tell myself and Brother Richard, now you've been executive director of Panifest for 27 years, and you have the perspective of before Panifest and since it has been going on. How successful has it been of helping folks from the diaspora, whether they're from the United States or other areas, be able to use Ghana as a gateway to come home? And do you keep records of how many people have used that and been resettled in the country? Are those type of records kept?
Well, not as proficiently as we would have liked or even should have, but I can say that we have been very successful. Probably we are the most consistent festival, because we're the longest and sustained festival, Pan-African festival on the African continent. More correctly, I've been the executive secretary and executive director for 20 years. Panifest was founded by the vision of one of the prominent Pan-Africanist women, Dr. Effa Sutherland, an indigenous Ghanaian who married an African-American in the 50s during the Nkrumah era, and that she had this vision and idea that Pan-Africanism was losing its momentum, and that she, as an artist and a writer and a playwright, needed to create something that would help to perpetuate and fan the flames of Pan-Africanism in a new generation. So that came to fruition in 1992, when the government of Ghana was coming into its fourth republic, coming out of a military rule, coming back into civilian government. It realized that it needed to re-up its Pan-African credentials and reach out to the diaspora to build bridges with the diaspora in order for it to have a successful rebuilding of the vision of Ghana. And so I came to be a part of it from its inception. I was still in the U.S. in 1992 and 94, so I helped to try to bring brothers and sisters across those waters to attend Panifest. And then after the 1999 edition, I became the executive secretary and executive director. So I've been with it since its inception, but only the executive director for the past 20 years. Okay. And so there's been great personalities here in Ghana, Dr. Mohammed Ben Abdellah, Dr. Kojo Yanka, the daughter of Effa Sutherland, Essie Sutherland, the kings and queen mothers of Cape Coast and Elmina, Asin Manso. So there's been a number of personalities that have helped sustain it. And what it has done is shown that Ghana has been the most consistent nation in reaching out to Africans in the diaspora, because it had the most numerous forts and dungeons on its coast, which actually historically proves that millions of Africans and more Africans left through the corridors of the old Gold Coast, which is now Ghana, than any other nation on this coast. Didn't mean they were Ghanaians. They came from all over Africa, but this was the gateway, the window. So Ghana has accepted the responsibility to be the gateway and the door for that return and to build the bridge and the re-engagement. So we have had thousands of Africans over the past 13 editions. We've had great names and great personalities, the Stevie Wonders, the Isaac Hayes. We have Public Enemy. We've had people come throughout the years that have joined us, Mutha Baruka, Rita Mali, and the I-3. So we've had personalities, scholars, the Dr. Jeffries, Professor Smalls have been here, Tony Browder, Julius Garvey. We've had people come through Panifest throughout the years that have made a significant difference in sharing scholarship, sharing their artistic skills. And we've had communities settling over here that's been encouraged to return to live here, to repatriate here. So all of that, we have businesses started here, people here farming, people doing hospitality business. We have retirement communities here. So Panifest has played this role and helping to bridge the gap and encourage Africans in the diaspora that there is a bridge that you can use to become refamiliarized with your African family, come to an African continent that does have a policy that recognizes its responsibility to reengage our brothers and sisters who've been disenfranchised from their motherland. So I would like to say PANIFEST has been successful, but due to financial constraints, we have still been limited in all of the audiences that we need to contact and come in contact with. You know, I know that we have had challenges supporting our own institutions and the institutions that represent our interests because we don't depend on foreign support. And so therefore we must up our game, not just with PANIFEST, but with any institutions that we have in our communities, our independent schools, our independent museums, our independent galleries, our independent artists. In order for us to be able to ask our artists and our scholars and the people who propagate our pride and our dignity to stay strong and to be strong, then we have to support them. And PANIFEST as an institution needs the continued support of the African family in order to stand for the principles that we were created for.
We're going to reach out to you leading up to PANIFEST. Maybe at the end of the year we'll do another swing back around, and then early next year we'll kind of get you back on to talk about some of the things planned.
Excellent. I appreciate it. I really appreciate the invitation for this evening, and hope that my conversation with you has also been enlightening to the audience and helpful to the audience. And my brother, I'm always, you know, on standby for you.
I'll talk
both
to you.
Both you brothers. Thank you very much.
I'll talk to you soon.
Take care.
Have a good evening.
All right. All right. Peace and blessings to all the audience, too.
All right. Richard,
yes.
Interesting conversation with both men tonight, I think.
Yeah, and it, you know, it kind of, you know, worked hand in hand and the way it worked out. You know, you're planning RBG 100 celebration, you know, dealing with the whole question of, you know, reuniting the African world and talking about the future, and then dealing with the whole question, you know, the identity question, and not just identity, but us being able to speak in our own voice without having any restrictions, you know, placed on us. But also, you know, the whole thing of the history of and operation of PANIFEST, I think, like, ties right into here's an institution that's developed out of that spirit, right?
I know it. Yeah.
You know, to unite the global African world around a cultural output. So it's definitely a great need for us to be able to recognize, and that both need our support.
Yeah, and it's, you know, he stated it's still in the fledgling stage, even though it's 27 years old.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
I mean, we can do anything we want as a people. You know, we don't have to feel like we can't do things or we're not confident, although some of our people might be, you know, have that spirit of not being confident in one another. But we can do anything we want if we come together and are serious.
Mm-hmm.
Before we leave the program this evening, I wanted to give the lineup on Time for an Awakening: Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. African Perspectives with Brother Oshie leading things off. Always interesting dialogue and conversation on African Perspectives. That's 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. Later on Monday evening, Acres of Diamonds with Brother Jihad Ahmed from 6 to 8 on Time for an Awakening Media. From 8 to 9, new program aired last week, Black Therapy Central, airs from 8 to 9 on Time for an Awakening Media, and from 9 to 10, every first and third Monday of the month, Conversation Reparations, which is in Cobra's program, airs from 9 to 10 on Time for an Awakening Media. Tuesday is Black Reality Think Tank from 8 to 10 on Time for an Awakening Media. On Thursday, after 7, the young ladies out of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, have a program from 6 to 8 on Time for an Awakening Media. On Saturday, Black Sisters Talk from 4 to 6 on Time for an Awakening Media. And on Saturday evening from 6 to 8, the Elders of Sankofa, part of the Black Reality Think Tank. Interesting lineup. Time for the Awakening Media. New programs coming on all the time. Just keep in mind that the Black Farmers will have their program on Time for an Awakening Media with some new and exciting things that they're introducing for our people to get involved in. It's going to be an interesting program. Look forward maybe within the next 2-3 weeks on Time for an Awakening Media. And Time for an Awakening is back on Friday evening from 8 to 10 on Time for an Awakening Media. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion as always, and we'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware. I know the things that they'll soon have to take care of. Uh-huh.